It's a great blessing to be engaged in worship with you this morning. I guess you could say a little bit more energetic about being here than normal. It kind of tends to happen when I get some time off and get to hear another man preach. I very much enjoyed Brother Luke last Sunday morning and night and Tuesday night. Enjoyed the time that he was with us. Enjoyed his preaching immensely. And I'm very thankful to be here this morning. I'd like to direct your mind and attention to the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to try to settle in the 12th chapter. Would like to introduce this passage by saying that whenever you read the Bible, it's very important not only to understand who's writing it and who they're writing it to, but it's also important to understand what the perspective is, what the setting is. Yesterday in service, Brother Mike brought to us that it was very important to understand, you know, that the Bible was not written to everybody. It was written to God's children. The promises in there are not written for everybody. They're written for those to whom they've been given. And the book of Ecclesiastes is a very, if you allow it to be, it's a very depressing book. And the reason it's a depressing book is you have to understand the perspective that Solomon is coming from. He is the author. He calls himself the preacher in this book, but as the author of the book of Ecclesiastes, he is basically looking at the perspective of life under the sun. In other words, just the bare bones natural existence that we have here in this world. What is his conclusion to all that? He repeats it over and over in this book. 33 times in 12 chapters, there is some variation of the expression, vanity of vanities. All is vanity and vexation of spirit. That's the conclusion that Solomon comes to. Now, this conclusion wasn't one that he arrived at flippantly. I mean, he was one who, he tried everything you could try. He had the position and he had the means to make it happen. And whatever it was that you could try in this world, he tried it. And the end result of that is everything under the sun is vanity. It's all vexation of spirit, whether it's substance that you have, whether it's fame that you have, whether it's experiences that you have. Solomon says when it comes to life under the sun, it just doesn't mean anything. He tried it all. But then when you get to the 12th chapter of Ecclesiastes, you read his thoughts in conclusion in all this. And we're going to try to ultimately drive down to verse 13. Because people these days are spending their life trying to answer two age-old questions. Those age-old questions is, who am I and what's my purpose here? It's really not hard. The Bible is very clear on that. But notice what Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 12, verse 1. He says, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, and nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. Children, listen to what Solomon is saying. Solomon says, remember your Creator when you're young. And the reason he's encouraging them for this is because he said there are things coming that are going to make it difficult, things you're not going to enjoy. You know, the world calls senior citizen days the golden years. That's not what Solomon called them. Solomon called them the evil days. And he's going to describe why, as we get older in this world and as things advance and progress, why they are evil days. Now, I promise, if you'll hang with me, it's going to be some rough sledding for the next 20 minutes. But if you can hang with me for the next 20 minutes, Solomon does not end this book on a bad note. But he goes through all this to show us where our center and where our alignment should be. So he says, remember your Creator when you're young. Remember Him when you have strength. Remember when you have energy, because there's some things coming that are going to be difficult, things coming that are going to make life even more challenging. He says, and we'll skip verse 2. He says in verse 3, he says, in the days when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look out of the windows are darkened. Notice in this verse the things that he brings to mind. The very first thing he says about these evil days is he says, in the days when the keepers of the house shall tremble. You ever seen somebody as they get older, they start to shake as they get older? And their nervous system begins to wear out. Solomon says that's what you have to look forward to in the evil days. The keepers of the house shall tremble. You just begin to shake and you don't have control of your body like you once did. He says that strong men shall bow themselves. You ever seen somebody as they get older, they get shorter? I don't mind saying this, even if he is here. My father-in-law is not the man he used to be. When he was old, when he was young, he was about 6'6". He's only 6'4" now. I mean, he's really started to bow himself. It doesn't matter. When I first met him, he was still 6'4". He wasn't 6'6". And it's rough when you pick out a girl to marry and you're already a big fella yourself. And your father-in-law, your prospective father-in-law, is bigger than you are. I didn't think that one through. Anyway, the funny thing is, when it came time for me to ask for his permission for her hand in marriage, here I am looking at a man who's bigger than I am. And when I was done with my request, he just sat there and stared at me. Had he been a smaller man, I said, "It's your turn to talk." But I just sat there and looked at him. Anyway, as you get older, you begin to bow yourself. You're not once the man of stature, the woman of stature that you once were. You're just not physically all that you were. He says, "The grinders shall cease because they are few. Your teeth begin to fall out. They begin to wax old and decay." He says, "They that look out of the windows shall be darkened. Your eyesight begins to go." I've been told by people that one day my eyesight's going to go. And I imagine it probably will. That's just naturally the way things happen. I've been told by older men that of all the things that they, as they've gotten older, that they miss the most. They miss their eyesight the most, because that's the thing that we seem to take for granted the most until it's gone. And that's the way life is a lot of times. We take things for granted until they're gone. So these are the things that begin to happen in the evil days. Buckle up. It's about to get worse. In verse 4 he says, "And the doors shall be shut in the streets when the sound of the grinding is low. And they that shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low." In this verse he not only says that your grinders cease because they are few, he says the sound of the grinding is low. You begin to lose your hearing. You begin not to be able to discern things like you once did. This next one is one that I've started to appreciate a little bit more. It says, "They shall rise up at the sound of a bird." Now, I'm sure a lot of you rose up last night. I mean, that wind last night was ridiculous at my house. I mean, there were times when it was making noises like I've never heard wind make, and my children are like, "What's that?" Now, if you rose up last night, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting old. It just means the wind was up. But you know, when I was young and in the church, I used to hear old deacons get down on their knees and ask the Lord to bless us with a good night's rest. You ever heard somebody pray for that? When I was young, I thought, why would you pray for that? Of course we're going to get a good night's rest. You know, when you're 12, 14, 16, 18 years old, you mean you can sleep on a board and wake up refreshed. I mean, I've been such that I actually worked out in the field during the day, and I actually went out of the field in the evening and actually fell asleep with my head against a hot truck door. I was 17. I woke up refreshed. I guarantee you, if I went to sleep with my head against a hot truck door now, I'd wake up going, "What's wrong with me?" They rise up at the sound of a bird. You don't sleep like you once did. You're just restless. You don't have the relaxation that you did as a younger person. And it says that the sound of the music and the daughters of the music is brought low. All those things that you enjoyed as a younger person, whether it was the entertainment of this world, whether it was music, whatever the situation is, that passion, that urge, those enjoyments just don't have the fascination that they once did. I remember the first time we ever went to Disneyland. I mean, it was a magical place. Now, whenever we go to Disney World, which we hadn't been in over a year, I'm going to try to see how long I can keep this streak going. I mean, it's not a magical place anymore. You know what Disney World is now? It's a place of long lines and a lot of people. But I look at my children's faces and they're just like, "We just can't wait to be there." And then 3 or 4 days later, "We can't believe it's over." Mom and I are like, "Yes, it's over." We just don't have the enjoyment for it like we once did. And other things in life are that way. You don't appreciate and enjoy the things that you once did. All these enjoyment factors begin to cease. It's about to get worse. The next verse says, "And they shall be afraid of that which is high, and fear shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden, and desire shall fail, because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets." Here in these expressions, he says something that It's hard for us to admit, but we have to admit, if we're honest, that it's true, that the older we get, we are afraid of those things which are high. That means that we're afraid of things we don't understand. You ever heard somebody say, "Oh, you can't teach an old dog new tricks"? You actually can. The problem is the old dog don't want to learn. No offense, but that's the way it is. We're not too old to learn, but the older we get, the less we want to, because we're afraid of that which we don't understand. But more than that, it says fears shall be in the way. You just start getting afraid of everything. When I was a little boy, we never lived close to our natural family. And grandmother and granddad were the greatest people on the face of the earth. They weren't super special in the world's eyes. Granddad was a drafter back when you used to draft things by hand. Do y'all remember Texaco 66? All right, he was a drafter for Texaco 66 when there were actually drafters and when there actually was a Texaco 66. Grandmother stayed at home. She was a homemaker. In the eyes of the world, they were nothing special. They were really special to me, and I look forward to their visits because we never lived close to them. And I never understood why all of a sudden they were supposed to be coming our way, and then all of a sudden they just canceled. And I said, "Why did Grandmother and Granddad not come?" And Mom said, "Well, they just didn't feel like it." I said, "Were they sick?" "No." "Well, I mean, did somebody die?" "No." I said, "What exactly did they say?" She said, "Well, they said they can't make it." I said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, they didn't give a reason." She said, "But more than likely, they were worried about somebody breaking into their house, stealing their stuff, and killing their dog." And I said, "But they live on a good street. They've got good neighbors." I said, "Why are they worried about that?" She said, "Son, they're old." I said, "What does that have to do with anything?" She said, "They're just scared of leaving the house for 3, 4, 5 days in a row." You know, I never understood that. As I'm getting older, I don't do that, but I'm starting to understand why that is. As we get older, we're just afraid of things. We just have fears in the way. That's just a natural part of life. It says, "The almond tree shall flourish, and the grasshopper shall be a burden." I was asked this morning by somebody in the kitchen where I was from. Well, first he asked, "Where did you come from when you came here?" And I said, "Mississippi." And he said, "So are you from Texas?" I said, "I am." Now, I'll give away who this is. It's somebody from Trail Branch. But I said, "Your pastor, Brother Stephen, likes to tell everybody I'm from California." I'm not. I spent some time there, but I'm not from there. But I'll say one thing about living in California. This verse actually comes alive right there in the valley where we lived in California. It says, "The almond tree shall flourish." We lived in the San Joaquin Valley for a number of years. And the San Joaquin Valley was known for almond trees. Now, Californians don't know how to pronounce it. They call them almonds, but they're actually almonds. I mean, no matter where I've lived, I've fought with people over the pronunciation of nuts. I mean, in California, they call them almonds. They're really almonds. Out here, you call them pecans. They're really pecans. Moving on. So out there, they had almond orchards. And those almond orchards would bloom in about late January, early February. And when those almond trees would bloom and blossom, the blooms were just pure white. And if you were to look out over an orchard of almond trees in full bloom, when the almond tree flourishes, those full blooms of white set against that brown bark, it looks just like a head of gray hair. Here Solomon says, "The almond tree shall flourish. Your hair will start to go gray." It says, "The grasshopper shall be a burden. Your natural strength begins to wear out. You can't do physically what you used to do." And it says that man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about in the street. The older you get, the worse you get until the day you die. And then people who loved you, they mourn and they go about in the streets, mourning your passing and mourning your lamenting. Before you get there, it gets even worse. It says, verse 6, "Or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel at the cistern." And he says, "And then shall the dust return to the earth as it was." Before you get to the part of going to your long home and the mourners going about in the street, the silver cord is going to be loosed, your spinal cord is going to be able to give out, your golden bowl is going to be broken, your mind and your intellect is going to be able to fail. It says the wheel is going to be broken at the cistern, and the fountain, or the pitcher, shall be broken at the fountain. Your bodily functions will start to give out. You won't have bladder control. Are any of you depressed yet? This is all we have to look forward to in a natural sense. And eventually the dust is going to go back to the earth from whence it was. Eventually from dust we were, and to dust we shall return. And everything from now until the day we get there is going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. It's going to get worse and worse as we get older. Children, listen. You're not going to be young forever. You're not going to have strength forever. You're not going to have your mind forever. You're not going to have all of your talents just sharp and ready to use forever. I don't care if your talent is strength. I don't care if your talent is intellect. If your talent is any different number of things. It's going to fail. And it's going to fade as you get older until the time that your body returns to the dust from whence it was. And if that was all that you and I had to look forward to, I've given you all a break. I said, buckle up for the next 20 minutes. I gave it to you in 18 and a half, all right? If that was all you and I had to look forward to, this would be a really sad thing. It would all be vanity. It would all be vexation of spirit. But I'm thankful that it doesn't end. And the dust shall return to the earth from whence it was. The rest of verse 7 says, and the Spirit shall return unto God which gave it. Friends, you and I are of the earth, earthy. You and I, like Adam, have been fashioned of the dust of the ground. You and I are natural beings. But thanks be unto God, that's not all there is to man. Thanks be unto God, that's not all there is to our existence. If you spend your days just chasing natural pleasure, chasing your natural dreams, chasing what your natural talents can get you, I assure you, you're going to reach the same conclusion Solomon did. Vanity of vanity. All is vanity, saith the preacher. Because friends, I don't care how smart you are, the man who wrote this is smarter than you were. That's not my words, those are Jesus's. He says, of men born of women, the only wise one, or the wisest one is Solomon. I don't care how much money you got, or how much you think you got. This man had more than you did. You know, his yearly annual income was 666 talents of gold. If any of you know why it was 666, you let me know. It's an odd number. But his annual income was 666 talents of gold. Now, the value of a talent fluctuates, just like our dollar fluctuates on the market. Anybody want to hazard a guess what 666 talents of gold would fetch on today's market? Solomon's annual income was just over $1 billion in gold. Any of us touch that? He had more money than we had. He had more wisdom than we had. And even with all this wisdom, he still lived with 1,000 women. I don't understand that. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. I don't know how you make that work. Quite frankly, I don't want to try. Moving on. I almost said something. Moving on. He had anything the heart could want. He had everything and more than you and I could ever dream of. And he said, at the end of the day, all that's worth nothing. Because at the end, what happens to Solomon? He tells you in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Back up with me just for a second. He says towards the end of this, he says in verse 19 of Ecclesiastes 3, he says, for that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts, even one thing befalleth them, as the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they all have one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. All go unto one place, all are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. Solomon says that naturally speaking, doesn't matter if you're a rich man or a poor man, you're going to die just like a beast dies. We all have the same breath, we all breathing the same air, and as far as natural things go, we're no better than a dog, a cat, a pig, a cow. Remember I said, naturally speaking, we're no better. Naturally speaking, we are a special creation by God. I admit that. But friends, one day a beast is going to draw its last breath. What's going to happen? He's going to die. His body's going to go back to the earth. One day, you're going to draw your last breath. What's going to happen? Your body, He's going to go back to the earth. That's all natural things give us. That's all this natural realm can give us. But thanks be unto God, he goes on to say in verse 20 of Ecclesiastes 3, he says, as they both die, he says, who knoweth the spirit of the beast that goeth downward and the spirit of man which goeth upward in death. There's the difference between a man and a beast. Not because we are so special. Not because we have made ourselves that way, but because God has given us something that he hasn't given a beast. He's given us something that is more than just this old flesh. I told you earlier that I don't know what's going to happen in 2020. Here's what I do know. They're talking about cloning people. They're talking about taking your brain, your functions, and having you live forever in some form or fashion. The man who started Disneyland and Disney World, parts of him are frozen somewhere and parts unknown, because if there ever came a day when they could cause people to live forever, he wanted to be on the list. I tell you, friends, that's vanity. You know why? Because I don't want to live on this earth forever. I don't want to live with all those problems I just listed. Because even if I could go on, even if my mental capacity could go on, would you really want to go on where your bladder just failed all over again? Would you really want to go on when your teeth fell out all over again? When you lost your strength all over again? When you got afraid all over again? Is this the world you want to live in? It's not the world I want to live in, but I can tell you this. They will never duplicate through cloning or anything else what God has done. Because there's something that God has done that man is incapable of reproducing. Only God can take nothing and make something. But I'll tell you something else that only God can do. Only God can breathe into somebody's nostrils the breath of life and that person become a living soul. Only God can do that. Man has not the ability to do that. I don't care what medical science says is possible. I don't care what medical professionals think is in the future. Friends, that's not science. That's science fiction. There's only one reality when it comes to this type of creative work, and it belongs to God. You and I have something inside of us that man can't duplicate. You and I have something inside of us that man cannot even begin to describe. Because when you and I talk about the Spirit going back to God which gave it, explain to me what a Spirit is. Explain it to me. What does it look like? How does it feel? What is its makeup? What is its substance? We're told in John 4 and 24 that God is a Spirit. Describe that. What does that look like? What is it made of? We don't have the ability to describe what the Spirit is made of. And if you want to know my honest opinion right here, when it says the Spirit goes back to God which gave it, he's talking about the soul as well. Give me 2 minutes on this one. There are some brethren who believe that the Spirit goes back to God, but the soul sleeps with the body until the resurrection. Friends, they must have got that out of the Bible because it ain't in there. The soul and the Spirit are joined together. The soul and the Spirit are basically united, that with whatever happens to one, it also happens to the other. Now, if you want to know the difference between the soul and the Spirit, this is not that hard. I've heard a dozen illustrations for this. Not a one of them makes sense. I've heard two dozen explanations. Not a one of them makes sense. But I can explain to you the difference between the soul and the Spirit very, very easily. Jesus knows what the difference is. He's the only one who will ever know, and he's the only one who it matters that he knows. Now, Hebrews 4 and 12 says, for the word of God is quick and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing, even dividing asunder the soul and the spirit, the joints and the marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. You take those three things that are mentioned there, it says that the Word of God, the living, powerful Word of God, is the only thing that knows those three things. He's the only one who knows the difference between the joints and the marrow. Orthopedic surgeons cannot tell you where a joint begins and marrow ends and vice versa. They just know that they're connected together in a very symbiotic fashion. Orthopedic surgeon cannot divide out for you the exact place where one begins and the other ends. Only God knows that. Only Jesus, the living Word of God, knows that. Let me ask you this. Do you know the thoughts and intents of people's heart? I got a good idea sometimes. You know, when somebody's looking at me while I'm preaching, and they're doing this, I'm pretty sure, I don't know what's happening in their head, but I'm pretty sure I know it's not what I'm talking about. When somebody's out there clipping their fingernails, I'm pretty sure they're more interested in their dead skin than they are in what I'm saying. Now, if that's judgmental, I'm sorry, but that's just the way it strikes me. Aren't you that way? If you're talking to somebody, and while you're talking to them, they're just going, do you really think they care about what you're saying? Well, friends, I may not know the thoughts and intents of somebody's heart. I can get a good read sometimes, and you can too. But only Jesus knows exactly what's happening down inside of our heart. Brother Mike yesterday mentioned in Psalm 139, where the Lord knows His down sittings and His uprisings. The Lord knows all the things about it. Right there in Psalm 139, about verse 5, He says, verily there is not a word in my mouth, but Thou knowest it altogether. David says, you know what I'm going to say before I say it. He knows the thoughts we're having, the things we're forming in our mind and in our heart. And no matter whether I know what you're thinking right now, He does, because He's the discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. He's the only one that can do that. He's the only one that can discern things about this body. As Brother Mike mentioned yesterday, we're fearfully and wonderfully made. There's things about us they can't explain. They will never be able to figure out. And friends, as much as I would like to tell you this, I would like to tell you that I believe all these efforts to cure cancer have some grand silver lining at the end. Friends, I don't believe they're ever going to cure cancer. You know why? They may help it in certain regards. I don't want to take anything away from the efforts. But friends, sickness, disease, and sorrow is a reality of this sin-cursed earth that we live in. They're never going to purge it. There's only one thing that's going to purge the sin, sorrow, stains of this earth, and that's when the Lord burns it up with fire. I would love to tell you that there's a possibility that we're going to live in a beautiful earth where we don't have these problems anymore, but that's just not reality. The Lord knows these bodies. We're fearfully and wonderfully made. They don't have all these things figured out. But I'm thankful it doesn't matter what the cancer is. I'm thankful it doesn't matter what the disease is. He has the power to reach in, step in, and intervene whenever it's His will to do so. But on top of all that, He's also the only one that can discern between the soul and the spirit. You know what that means? When one does one thing, so must the other. You find Scripture where it says the Spirit goes back to God which gave it. You'll find also Scripture where at death it says the soul is in departing, as it happened when Rachel, Jacob's wife, died. You'll also find it says whenever Elijah raised the widow's son back to life, that his soul came back into him again, meaning his spirit also came back into him again. Whatever happens to one, happens to the other. When one is born of God from above, so the other is born of God from above. When one goes back to God which gave it, so goes the other back to God which gave it. The soul and the spirit are linked and united in that way. Now that took more than 2 minutes, but it took four. But I'd given you 18 minutes on something that's supposed to take 20. So we're all right. We're on target. All right. Solomon goes on from this, talking about the spirit returning to God which gave it. And he gives that glimpse of positivity and outlook. And here's what we're supposed to do with that. If you and I were to look at this list of what's happening to us in old age, with that one silver lining, that whenever death comes, we're delivered from all this, and the Spirit goes back to God which gave it, you might say, what is my purpose then? What am I supposed to do? So glad you asked. In verse 9, Solomon has this to say. He says, and moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yea, he gave good heed, and sought out, and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find out acceptable words, even that which was written was upright, even words of truth. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails, fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. You might look at this and all we've talked about and say, all right, if all I've got to look forward to is just getting worse and worse physically, my body's going to wear out, my mind's going to wear out, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse, but when death comes, it's all going to be all right. I'm going to be delivered. What's the point? What am I supposed to do? Listen to what Solomon says. He says, moreover, the preacher also sought out to do something. And what was it that he sought to do? One of the things he sought to do is he sought to find the purpose and the place after all that he tried. Solomon had the money, he had the women, he had everything else, and he tried it all, and none of it worked. So what did he do? He sought out acceptable words, words of truth, words that were upright. And he sought, notice what he says in verse 9, that moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Solomon says, in all that I have, and all that I tried, and after all the failures that I had made, I still wanted to teach the people knowledge. You know what one of the things that you and I get from Solomon that he couldn't get for himself? You and I can look at Solomon's life, look at what all he did, and realize, I don't have to try that to know how it ends. You ever heard the expression, experience is the best teacher? You ever heard that? If you believe that, stop it. It's a lie. Experience is not the best teacher. It's a very effective one, but it ain't the best. Solomon tried following his heart's desire to the very end. Where did it get him? Nowhere. You know what that tells me? I don't have to experience getting my heart's desire to the very end to realize it ain't going to get me anywhere. I can look at Solomon and say, that's not worth my time. Experience is a very effective teacher. You know what the best teacher is? Words of the wise. Even that which is upright, even words of truth. That's the best teacher. Where's the instruction come from? Where do these words of truth, words that are upright, where do they come from? They come from God. Children, listen up. I and many other people in this room have made bad choices by running with the wrong people. You don't have to raise your hand. I've made bad choices running with the wrong people. How about you? I can tell you from experience that if you hang with the wrong people, you're going to make the wrong decisions. I can tell you that when you hang with ungodly people, you're not going to make them godly. They're going to make you ungodly. I can tell you that things that you would never have ever dreamed of doing, you get with a mob, you get with a group, and all of a sudden you do them without half thinking about it. You know, man by himself, he's only half a fool. Man who's in a group, he's a complete fool. That'll come to some of the rest of you later. I mean, you ever get with people and somebody makes this comment that is way off the wall, that if it was just you, you'd be like, man, you're crazy. But in this group, someone says, yeah, that's right. Somebody says, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And pretty soon, you know what you're saying? Yeah, that's right. Things that you would never agree to by yourself, you agree to when you're in a group. I can tell you from experience, that's not the way you want to go. But children, you don't have to experience that to realize it's wrong. Listen to the words of wise men. You might say, well, Solomon, how wise could he be? He did all these stupid things. I know I'm not supposed to say that from the pulpit, but there's no other way to describe it. He did stupid things. But it says that he was still wise. You know where that wisdom was? That was the wisdom that God had given unto him that he realized now where he should have been all along. And he sought to teach the people words of truth, words that are upright. And what did he seek out? He sought out acceptable words. Now, acceptable here is a very interesting word, because in the world we live in today, what is it people want you to do? Well, you just need to accept me for who I am. Or you just need to accept this, or you just need to accept that. I'll tell you what I will accept about a lot of things that are happening in the world today. I'll accept that God said they're wrong, and they still are. I know of no other nicer way to say it. God said they're wrong, and they still are. That's what I'll accept. But the word acceptable here doesn't mean what the world uses accept to talk about. The word acceptable here literally means pure, unadulterated truth. You know what ought to be acceptable to us? That which is pure, unadulterated truth. That's what the preacher sought out, was words that had no flaw, words that had no blemish, things that you could stand on, rest in, trust in. I tell you, friends, there are a lot of things being said today you can't rest in. You can't trust in. And the words of the wise, he said, these acceptable words, they're like goads and they're like nails, fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. I tell you, I'll be honest, I prefer the words of the wise that are like nails. You know why? Because a nail is something you can hang something on. I like things that I can hang things on. I like words of truth, acceptable words such as, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Friends, you can hang things on that. You can hang things on the fact that I will give unto them eternal life and they shall never perish. Neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand. I like being able to hang things on that. I like being able to hang things in my life on the fact of, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, you believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. But I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. Friends, all of those are words of truth. They were given from one shepherd. And they're things that you can hang your life on. I tell you, it's all right going through the things that we go through if we know that He goes through it with us. It's all right going through the things of life that we go through if we know that it doesn't change the fact that we'll never perish and that He's going to come again and receive us unto Himself, that where He is, we're going to be also. I like being able to hang my life on that. Those are words of truth which are given from one shepherd. But the words of the wise aren't just like nails. They're like goads too. Y'all know what a goad is, right? Something you use to prod cattle with. And you better be careful when you prod them where you're standing and what direction they're facing. I asked James Isaacs one time, I said, you ever goaded a cattle when he was facing the wrong way? He said, yep. You goad it the wrong way at the wrong time, or when it's facing the wrong direction, you're going to get a rude awakening. When I was about 16 or 17, I spent a summer working with our county vet. We lived in a county where there was only about 8,000 people in the whole county, so we had one vet for the whole county. And he was the kind of vet who, he did as much work out of the office as he did in the office. He went to farms and ranches, and we worked on pigs and cows and horses and whatnot. Remember the first time he gave me a glove that went all the way to my shoulder, and I said, you want me to do what? Moving on. But he also did something that a lot of vets don't do. He actually provided services that not all of them would. Well, one of them was that he would actually shoe horses. And he made it look so easy. I mean, he put that horse's leg right up between his legs, had the nails in his mouth, got the shoe set, and just tink, tink, tink. I mean, he just went to work. Well, I tell you, he made it look so easy. He said, you want to try that? Yeah. So I did what he did, I thought. Put that horse's leg between my legs, got that shoe set. I made one tink, and the next thing I know, I'm flying through the air about 30 feet away from that horse. Thank God he hit me in the butt. If he'd hit me in the back, it'd have been all over. I used that to make a point. I wasn't trying to goad that horse, but in effect, that's what I did. I stuck that horse, and it made him hurt. And he was facing the wrong way to do something to me that I didn't want done. Y'all get the point? There are things in the Word of God that are true that are going to stick us. They're going to hurt. Do you like being told you're a sinner? Be honest. I know you're all good old Baptists. You believe in total depravity. And you love it when you hear a preacher talk about total depravity, right? Because you know he's going to talk about grace afterwards. You love it when you hear a preacher talk about sin. Because after he talks about sin, he's going to talk about mercy, right? You want me to start lining out specific sins this morning? Old Baptists love it when you talk about sin. They just don't want you to get specific with it. I mean, let's be honest. I'll give you one. Proverbs 23:1. When thou sittest down at a feast, it says, put a knife to thy throat if thou be a man given to much appetite. Uh-oh. You know who wrote that? Solomon. And he said, if you're somebody who's given to appetite, it's better if you just stick a knife to your throat when you sit down to eat. You want me to get any more specific? I better hear a no or I'm going to start getting specific. I heard one no. Friends, the words of the wise are like goads. They poke at us. They prod us. They show us what we're doing wrong. In 2 Timothy 3:16, the Apostle Paul tells young ministers that all Scripture is given by the inspiration of God, and it's profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. Those four things that he gives there, that the Word of God is profitable for. Doctrine tells you what is right. Reproof tells you what is wrong. Correction tells you how to go from wrong to being right. And instruction in righteousness tells you how to stay right once you are right. That's what words of truth are. They're all given from one shepherd. But this goads and nails that we have, it's not always going to be pleasant. Friends, it's good for us. You ever heard your mother say when you didn't want to eat a certain thing, eat it, it's good for you? Parents, by the way, that is not as it's not very effective. But use that one instead of starving kids in Ethiopia. I still don't understand why starving kids in Ethiopia matter to what I eat. But I tell you, it ought to matter whether it's good for us or not. It ought to matter whether it's in our best interest or not. You know, when the Lord gives us things, and He gives us things to do, and He gives us things to fulfill, they're not to make life miserable. They're to make life better. Let me ask you a question. Is it better for your life if you're married to be faithful to your wife or your spouse or to cheat on them? What's better? It's better for you. It's better for your family. It's better for the community. It's better for the world if we do what God told us to do. And that shouldn't be unenjoyable. Is it in your best interest not to rob a bank? Sure. The Lord didn't give these things to make life miserable. He gave these things to make life better. And friends, they're good for us to do these things. Now, in verse 12, I've got to move fast. In verse 12, Solomon says something that's very important for today. He says, "And further by these, my son, be admonished. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh." Here, Solomon says, there are things you're going to encounter. There are things you're going to experience, my son, when you're trying to remember your Creator. When there's going to be all these different things out there. And they're going to be a weariness to you. There's always been a lot of books made. There's always been a lot of opinions out there. And I'll say this, there's probably more opinions out there now than there ever have been. I know Solomon said, of making of many books, there is no end. You may say, well, you're about to talk about social media. That doesn't apply. Sure it does. One of those is called Facebook. So, here we go. When it comes to social media, can you find any opinion out there? I don't know from experience, I'm not on there, but I've heard that any opinion you want is on social media. Am I right? Yes or no? I need your help. I'm not on social media. Thank you. So, any opinion you want is out there. You have any idea under the sun, you will find somebody to agree with you and somebody to disagree with you. The point is not that the information is out there. The point is not that some people believe it. The point is not that you can find somebody who is on your side. The point is whether it is true. Because you can find all kind of books to say all kind of things. You can find all kind of opinions to either agree with you or back up what you think. But friends, the point is this. Is it words of wisdom? Is it the goads and nails which are given from one shepherd? Or is it just the study of many books and the weariness of the flesh of which there's no end to these things? So what is the conclusion of all this? Very simply put, who are you? What's your purpose in life? What is it we're supposed to be doing here? After all that I've said and all that I've gone through, what does Solomon say in verse 13? He says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Natural life, spiritual life, our time, our effort, all that we are. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God. Keep His commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. Not some of it, this is all of it. First and foremost, what is it about fearing God and keeping His commandments that is set in direct contrast to the life under the sun? What is it about God and His commandments that is different from all the things that Solomon experienced? Because all the things that you have under the sun, they change. They move. They travel around. Are you healthy right now? You'll get sick. Are you young now? You'll get old. Are you smart now? You'll get dumb. Smartest I ever was when I was 16. I got dumb in a hurry. Are you strong now? You'll get weak. Are you brave now? You'll be afraid. Are you rich now? You'll be poor. Even if you have all the money in the world, when you draw your last breath, we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. I mean, it doesn't matter what you have in this world. It's going to change. What did Job say? He said, naked I came into this world. Naked I'm going to leave this world. I have nothing. I brought nothing. I'll end with nothing. But what does he say? He said, the Lord gave. The Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. It doesn't matter what you have. It's going to change. It doesn't matter where you are. It's going to change. The only thing that you can rest on are things that do not change. Fear God. He doesn't change. That word fear there literally means to respect Him. Give Him honor and reverence. Friends, there's an old expression. I used to see it on bumper stickers all the time. I don't see it much anymore in this godless world we live in. You ever heard the expression, well, the Lord said it, I believe it, and that settles it? You know, you can cut that middle phrase out. If the Lord said it, that settles it. Now, it's in our best interest to believe it. It's in our best interest to honor it. But friends, fear Him. Honor Him and respect Him. If He says it, do it. What did Mary tell the servants in John 2? Whatsoever He saith unto you, do it. Don't ask any questions. Don't wonder why. I tell you, there's a lot of times we ask questions, but I'll tell you one thing. We should never question why God does what He does. Because He knows better than we do, and He is wiser than even the man that wrote this book we're reading from. Solomon was a wise man, but God's wiser. Solomon was a rich man. God's richer. Solomon was a powerful man. God's mightier. Friends, fear Him. Give Him the honor that is due unto Him, because that will never change. And keep His commandments. You know, we're such frail creatures. We teach our children things and then have to undo what we teach them. Don't believe me? What do you spend the first 2 years of your child's life teaching them to do? Come on. Talk. Say, Dada. All right, walk. Come on. Don't just sit there. Walk. Stand up. Walk. We spend the first 2 years of their life teaching them to talk, teaching them to stand up and walk, and spend the next however many years they're at our house trying to get them to sit down, shut up, and be still. Now, I know I use that as a humorous example. But think about the things that we have to unteach our children. I remember the first time it dawned on me that Dad was actually halfway down the road before he put his seatbelt on. He wouldn't allow us to do that. But he'd be halfway down the road driving and doing that. And when that dawned on me, I said, Dad, how come you don't have to put your seatbelt on before we start, but we do? He said, do as I say, don't do as I do. You ever heard that one? You know what I said that day? I ain't never going to tell my children that. I have. We teach our children a lot of things by our behavior, by our example. If you're a bitter person, buckle up. You'll probably have bitter children. If you're a judgmental person, you'll probably have judgmental children. If you're a joyous person, you'll probably have joyous children that imitate what we do. The other day, our eldest was complaining that our youngest was imitating everything that he did. I told him, you ought to feel honored. People want to do the opposite of what I do. Your little brother wants to do exactly what you do. But friends, that's a grave responsibility, is it not? Parents, grandparents, neighbors, uncles, aunts, whoever you are. For those that are in their youth, what do we need to be doing with our example? Teaching them by our example, not just to fear God, but also to keep His commandments. You know, when we were growing up, it wasn't a question of if we were going to church. Might have been a question of where, but it wasn't a question of if. I didn't grow up getting the option of, well, maybe we're going to go to church, maybe we won't. You know why we did? First and foremost, that was His commandment. But friends, I used to go to church because I had to. Now I go to church because I get to. Big difference. But you know why that pattern was ingrained in me? That was a pattern that I had growing up. I want my children to know, growing up, there's no option. This is what we do. I used to have to read my Bible every day. Now I get to read my Bible every day. But my pattern started because that was what I was made to do. I used to have to pray. I used to have to pray because I didn't get a choice. When Dad called on you, you didn't get to argue. That was just the way it was. Now I feel privileged that I get to open up to the King of Glory. But friends, that was my pattern of being taught to keep His commandments. Who are you? Naturally speaking, you're of the earth, earthy. Naturally speaking, you're vanity and vexation of spirit. But thankfully, because of Him, you're His child. And you matter to Him. And what's your purpose? To stand on things that don't move. Fear God and keep His commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. You know, Solomon says earlier in Ecclesiastes 7, last verse of that chapter, he says that God made man upright, but they sought out many inventions. Doesn't sound to me like in 2020 a lot of things have changed. Man's out there seeking new inventions. A new way to do the same old thing. Friends, we don't need to search out ways to do the same old thing. We don't need to search out for some new thing to hold on to, some new toy to have. What we really need to do is just stand on what will never, ever shift, no matter what happens in this world. And if we do that, you and I will have plenty to do all the days of our life. I know I'm not old. I'm older. I read Ecclesiastes 12, and no, I don't have an almond tree like some of you do. My strength hasn't gone like some of yours has. My mind has faded. I can't just pull things out like I once did. I don't have the energy and the stamina that I once did. So I understand I'm getting there. But here's one thing that I can say without fail. The things that I was forced to do in my youth, in remembering my Creator, stick with me better than anything else. Children, listen. When I was 2 years old, I was forced to memorize 1 John 4:19. I can say it in my sleep. We love Him because He first loved us. Psalm 119:11, Thy word have I hidden my heart, that I might not sin against Thee. Other verses that I've learned and taught myself, they don't just stick with me. Those do. You know why? Because when you remember your Creator in your youth, it will help you when you get old to hold on to things, to have things stick with you that you wouldn't otherwise. If you're not young, you say, what does it have to do with me? Help those that are young soak those things up so that when they get old, they'll be in a better position than we were. Help your children, your grandchildren, your nieces, your nephews, your neighbors, whoever they are, help them to keep their Creator in mind. So that when they get old, what does it say? These things will not depart from them, nor will they depart from it. Solomon says in Proverbs 22 and verse 6, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. Let that be our example. Let that be our duty. But more than that, let that be our joy and our privilege in serving the Lord all the days of our life. Again, I don't know what this year holds. I don't know what I may face. But here's what I do know. Fearing Him and keeping His commandments never goes out of style. It is right for a child of God to do. It will never pass away, and it's worth our time all the days of our life. I have not always done as I should have done, but I can tell you this. There is no wasted time spent serving the Lord as He ought to be served. If we do that, we'll be a blessed people. And if we'll do that in the right way, we'll be a joyous people, be an example unto others to live as we live and to love the things we love and to follow after these things so that the land we live in would be a blessed land, be a land of peace and godliness. May that be our example to others as we go through life. And if we do, may we be able to spend our days living a quiet and peaceful life with all men. I hope these things have been a blessing unto you. If they have, you give Him all the praise, honor, and glory. If they haven't, if I've offended this day, you lay that to my charge, because that's my fault, not His. May the Lord richly bless you, my Lord.